Shopping for skincare is frustrating. Buy it, try it, toss it, repeat. Curology is here to help. Curology pairs with your own licensed dermatology provider who assesses your skin and prescribes you a custom formula to tackle acne, dark spots, or even fine lines. No guesswork, just a formula made to work for you. Get your consultation today at Curology.com/SXM. Curology, skincare with a face. Subject to consultation, subscription required. Cancel anytime.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Brett McKay here, and welcome to another edition of the Art of Manliness podcast. Now, we've written about some really famous and great men on the site, and a lot of them have one thing in common. They were charismatic. Napoleon, Theodore Roosevelt, Alexander the Great, Socrates, Jesus, they all had charisma in spades. People wanted to be near them because they gave off some sort of aura that made people feel good about themselves. Is this charisma, this ability, is it innate or is it something you're born with, or is it something you can develop intentionally? Well, our guest today has written a book and said that the whole idea that charisma is some sort of magical innate thing you're born with is a myth. Her name is Olivia Fox, and she is the author of the book, The Charisma Myth, How Anyone Can Master the Art and Science of Personal Magnetism. In our discussion today, Olivia and I discuss what it means to be charismatic. What are the things, the attributes you need to be a charismatic person? How you can use that to improve your business life, your love life. It's a really fascinating discussion. I think you're going to get a lot out of it. So stay tuned. Olivia Fox, welcome to the show.
Hi, Brett. It's a pleasure.
Okay, so you are a charisma expert. That's what it says on your webpage. How does one become a charisma expert? Because like, I thought it was just sort of like, that's like being an expert in alchemy,
yeah,
or something like that. So how did this happen?
A personal desperation, which is often a great motivator. I was very much socially awkward. Actually, you could probably say completely socially inept until my late teens. And that was a moment at which I realized I had two choices. Either I exiled myself to a desert island, which is still an attractive option on occasion, or I learned how to make this whole human thing work. And that's where I started.
That there, so just out of need, you were an awkward teenager.
I was, yes, and in many respects, I still am a diehard introvert, and the desert island option is one that I often long for after an intense, let's say, series of speeches.
Okay, I understand that feeling. I've had that as well. All right, so your book is called The Charisma Myth. So what's the myth of charisma?
The myth essentially sums up the book in one sentence. Charisma is not innate. It can be learned, and here's how. And I think that one of the reasons that we assume that charisma is innate is because it's a learned behavior that is learned at such a young age that that by the time we reach adulthood, which is usually when we start observing the charismatic ones, it looks as if they've always had it. Whereas in fact, it's a bit like walking. You learn how to walk by modeling others' behavior, and you fall a lot. And eventually, you can do it, well, and for some people, really, in their sleep. Charisma is the same way. It just so happens that some people started modeling early, and others simply didn't.
Interesting. So it's not innate. So okay, well, here's a question I have. Like, I'm a parent. Like, how do I know if my kid's going to be charismatic? Like, can you tell? Like, I have a son that's almost four. Can I tell,
sure,
right now if he's going to be, you know, next Bill Clinton?
Well, you've got a couple of predictors, and the strongest predictor is, are you or is your partner charismatic?
Okay. I'm not sure about that.
And then you can look at how they interact. And we're going to talk about the core components of charisma, and you can actually start seeing them early on. Presence, attentiveness to others, self-confidence. But again, because it's something that can be learned, I like to compare it to learning how to drive a car. So certain people have certain predispositions towards becoming good drivers, and not all of us is going to become a race car driver in the same way that not all of us become Bill Clinton, but most of us are able to learn enough to get from point A to point B. And it really is the same with charisma.
Okay. Well, when you say predisposition, is that, are you perhaps suggesting there is a genetic component to it maybe?
Well, I would say a personality component. And looking at the genetic components of personality, of course, gets a bit tricky.
Oh, yeah.
Because then you get into not just the nature versus nurture, but what are the environments that causes certain genes to express or to not express, et cetera.
Epigenetics, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
But yes, there is a personality component. So I'm being an introvert. I can be charismatic for brief periods of time, sometimes for longer periods of time, and I can express certain forms of charisma easier than others. For everyone, there's going to be certain styles that come more naturally.
Okay, yeah, we're going to get more into those styles. So this is great. So there's like hope for people who feel like they're socially awkward. They're not doomed to a life of social awkwardness.
Absolutely. And in many ways, the introverts have a big advantage because introverts, by definition, don't need to be the center of attention. And that makes them fantastic listeners and gives them an easier chance to attain the core component of focus.
Excellent. Okay. So we've always thought of charisma as this sort of magical power. But you showcase in your book just like tons of research that it's not magical at all.
Yeah.
So how did scientists or psychologists, whatever, how did they research, convert charisma from magic to science? How did that happen?
So that's really interesting. For me, the first mystery was, why hasn't it been studied yet? If you look at the different varieties of leadership that are studied, you'll find everything from transformational leadership to psycho-spiritual, everything under the sun. And charisma, until recently, really hadn't been studied much. It seemed to be kind of a taboo subject. And the best explanation I found is that Peter Drucker, one of the most, possibly the most influential business thinker and thought leader of the 20th century, was vehemently opposed to charisma, since he had experienced the Nazi and the fascist regimes personally. Mm. So there is a theory which would make sense that it wasn't until Drucker's shadow passed that people started looking at charisma again. And in terms of how they did that, in a lab, they were able to raise or lower people's level of charisma as if they were turning a dial.
Wow.
Simply by instructing them to display specific charismatic behaviors.
Wow. What's some of the research that's out there that says, yeah, you can change your charisma? Is there a specific, an experiment that's kind of sort of the bulwark or sort of lays the foundation for all this?
There's not been one experiment. The one that I referenced just now is Howell and Frost's experiment in a lab. And this was, that particular one was a combination of self-report, meaning what were the ratings of charisma of the same person with charismatic behaviors and with non-charismatic behaviors in a lab environment. So this was really a controlled study. But there have been a variety of ways, from how persuasive the person was, plus how likable the person was, plus how impressive the person was. And you can really decompose it into a series of attributes, which put together give you charisma.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting that there's all this research now. And because you mentioned that, people didn't like studying or talking about charisma. I love collecting old books, and books from like the late 19th century and early 20th century. There's like books about animal magnetism.
Yeah.
Like how to develop your animal magnetism, which is basically charisma. It's like how you can hypnotize people. And it was kind of goofy stuff, but I guess that was sort of an example of early charisma studies.
It was, yes. And a few authors, what they did is that they portrayed it as a negative. So what they were doing is saying, listen, here's how you could develop this dangerous quality that is charisma if you wanted to, but of course you're not such a person, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so how can charisma improve your life? Because there's some interesting research that you cite in the book that besides just making you more persuasive, but there's some other things that just if you're a man, for example, developing your charisma can do for you.
It's pretty extraordinary. Well, let me start with a non-obvious, which is that having a charismatic leader, raises your stock price, the stock price of a company in terms of in times of financial difficulty compared to a company and an organization with a non-charismatic leader. There's other examples of the persuasiveness, how fast you advance in your career. But of course, let's get down to the subject that you're probably talking about, which is, does it make you more attractive to whichever gender you're trying to attract? Yes, of course. That's probably the number one X factor that dominates all others, particularly if you're seeking to attract women who tend to be in the sexual and romantic context more susceptible to charisma than men.
Interesting. And there's been studies that show that it can actually make you look taller.
Oh, taller, better looking, more intelligent, and richer.
Even if you're not.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Exactly.
Well, I'm curious about that bit about companies that do well with a charismatic leader. I mean, couldn't that actually bite him in the butt? You can just have like a charismatic leader, but the guy is doing nothing for the company. Right.
Charisma is a big problem in the sense that it's like any other tool. A knife can be used to heal or to hurt in the hands of a criminal or in the hands of a surgeon. It's the same tool. It's a knife. The very same with charisma. Let's say that you've got a Save the World organization. Having a charismatic leader at the helm of that can be a tremendous benefit to the world. Most dictators are incredibly charismatic.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, who was it that wrote Good to Great? Who's that guy?
Jim Collins.
Yeah, he talks about that, like,
doesn't like charisma.
Yeah, he doesn't like charisma. He's like the Drucker. He's like, boring guys do better for the company in the long run.
Yeah, and he might be right, because charisma really lets you get away with a lot, because it makes people want to do whatever you want them to do.
And that could be a good thing. So, like, an example of a CEO who had lots of charisma you talk about is Steve Jobs.
Obviously, yes. He would be one of our paragons of charisma. But again, what's really interesting is that for Jobs, his charisma was 100% learned. And I don't think it's up anymore, but I used to have on my blog a analysis of Jobs learning charisma from 84 to 2011 with a point-by-point example with each of the videos, where you can see him progressively learning each of the charisma components. And of course, with the 2011 version, when you compare directly with the 1984, it's hard to believe it's the same guy.
Wow. All right. So there's hope for everyone then. Okay.
There really is. Yes.
Could do that. Okay. Great. So let's get sort of the nitty gritty, because I'm sure everyone's like listening. Okay. Oh, yeah. This is great. I want to be more charismatic. How do I do it? So you argue that there are three pillars of charisma. We've actually written about this on our website. Your book inspired a series of posts.
Why? Thank you.
So what are those three pillars for the folks who haven't read that post or seen your book?
Well, shame on them. And I think they should go to both your and my website to catch up on that.
Yeah.
Presence, power, and warmth. So what they mean, if you think about someone describing their experience with a highly charismatic person, you'll often hear them talk about what an incredible presence that person has, whoever it is, from Condi Rice to Bill Clinton. And what presence is literally the ability to stay present moment by moment with whatever is happening and not let your mind wander. And the reason this is so critical is that if you've ever been in a conversation where only half your mind is present and the other half is thinking about something else, there's a high chance that your eyes will glaze over and your reactions will be a split second delayed. And people will catch that on a subconscious level. And it will give them, it's called an incongruence in technical terms, and it will give them the feeling that something's not quite right. So lack of presence, not being fully present in the conversation, in the interaction, presence is kind of the foundation. If you don't have that, everything else falls apart.
So then there's power and warmth.
Yeah. So power, I want to really clarify that power is not actual physical power. It's not the power to command an army. It doesn't relate to the actual power you wield, rather the perception of that we get of your ability to impact the world around you. And there are a variety of signals that we look to get that. And of course, all the accoutrements, you know, French is my native language, so I'll always have trouble saying French words with an American accent, but all the little signals around a person that can symbolize power and status, social status, a lot of intelligence, whatever it might be. But the biggest determinant is the perceived level of self-confidence. And the reason for that is that it's a heuristic. Like many other things, our brain uses a shortcut to determine power. And if you project self-confidence, the other person will assume that you actually have something to be confident about.
Gotcha. So, I mean, I thought what I was struck by, though, about power, and we wrote about it, I surprisingly got a lot of pushback on it. It's just like people are like, if you're trying to like display power, you're trying to be like a douchebag, you're trying to be domineering. I was kind of surprised that people were kind of uncomfortable displaying power.
Well, let me put it this way. A lot of people are uncomfortable with the idea of trying to display power or confidence and then being found out. To the fact that they actually don't have any. And so you'll get a lot of pushback about that. But just to be clear, there's a difference between confidence and arrogance. And I'm very clear that what you want to focus is the confidence. What you want to display is the confidence, not the arrogance. And the difference really will show up in minute areas in your body language. So let's say that if your head is tilted up too far, there's a chance that you will come across as the classic expression, looking down your nose at someone, comes from the fact that when we are contemptuous, we really do lift up our noses as if the other person stinks. I'm always delighted to talk about whatever pushback you get. So if you have any specific areas.
That was the one. And I think a lot of it was with, because I tried to explain, like, yeah, it's not, you're not trying to be domineering. It's just showing you have confidence.
Yeah.
But I think people just, when they see power, oh, you got to show, display power. There's, I think, often negative connotations with that. And they kind of read into stuff that wasn't there, which I think is kind of interesting. I mean, that's one of the interesting things with a blog. People, the comments usually say more about the person than like the content.
Always,
So power, so besides, what's like, I guess you talked about some like specific things you can do to increase your, I guess, present or display of power that are sort of subtle. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What are some of those things that guys can do?
I think that one of the most important ones, and here's a good example, Brett. Right now, I can hear you typing on the keyboard, which immediately gives me the
my computer froze.
There you go. And remember, perception is reality.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what reality is, right?
Yeah.
So, of course, reality is that your computer froze and you need to get it back unfrozen for a variety of excellent reasons. But the perception is going to be, oh, he's spaced out.
Yeah. I'm not present.
There you go. I think the fastest way for guys is to get comfortable with what's called expansive poses. And there's an example in the book, and I think you put it on the website, where you learn how to kind of position yourself like a big gorilla or like an army general and really try to take up as much physical space as you can. And that will actually affect your biochemistry. But the other thing that I don't think I was able to put in the book and that I will often recommend to guys I'm coaching is take martial arts.
Okay.
And take a real martial art. And I know I'm going to piss some people off, but don't go for a sissy sport like karate.
Yeah.
Go for Brazilian jiu-jitsu, MMA, judo, wrestling. Go for a full contact sport. And the reason is not only do you really learn focus and how to inhabit the space? But there's knowing that you could take down whoever it is that you're in front of really gives you a background unintimidatability, if that makes sense.
Yeah. That's awesome. Well, actually, we have a guest post coming up, a guy who started a fight club in his garage. And awesome. He works in sales, and he says like it's helped him. Like when he gives a presentation, I just have a little bit more confidence. And he's he's not like a bro. Like he got his MMA in writing from Notre Dame. He's a really smart guy, and he beats the crap out of his friends in his garage like once a week, and it's helped his career.
It'll help you in a lot of ways. And the other thing that's fun is that I've never met as nice and calm people as I have on the fighting mat. It's remarkable in the way that, one, you get to work out any aggression that you have on the tatami or in whichever art that you're practicing. And two, the really mean guys often get weeded out. The other thing that I would very much recommend, and this one hits all three areas of presence, power, and warmth, is improv. And many, many cities have classes of improv theater. Let's be clear, not improv comedy, improv theater. And improv really teaches you to think on your feet and be comfortable improvising, obviously. And that one can make a gigantic difference to your social confidence.
Texas Pete is the sauce that allows you to sauce like you mean it. Each Texas Pete sauce is packed with a bold, balanced flavor. The signature tanginess is what makes it a legendary hot sauce that can be used on just about anything. You're definitely going to want to try every flavor. The original hot sauce has a famous secret blend of fermented peppers. Their hotter hot sauce is 3 times hotter than the original, and it's not for the faint of heart. They also got a flavor called Sabor by Texas Pete, adds authentic Mexican flavor. And they also have a dust dry seasoning that matches the flavor of the original hot sauce in a flavorful dry rub. But the flavor that I've been enjoying lately is the chop sriracha sauce. It's got chili, garlic, and some tropical tangy notes. It's really good. I love putting it on my eggs. Texas Pete, sauce like you mean it. Visit TexasPete.com and use the store locator to find Texas Pete products as well as purchase sauces and get recipe inspiration. And you can use promo code PODCAST24 for 20% off at TexasPete.com. That's PODCAST24 for 20% off at TexasPete.com. Check out the Sriracha Cha Sauce. Do you know what moms love? Moms love pictures of their kids and of their grandkids. At least my mom does. She loves pictures of my kids. And if your mom is like my mom and loves pictures of her grandkids, I got the perfect gift for her for Mother's Day. It's called the Aura Frame. The Aura Frame is a beautiful Wi-Fi connected digital picture frame that allows you to share and display unlimited photos with your mom or anybody who likes pictures. This is a really cool product. The frame itself looks fantastic. The display is amazing. It's easy to set up. You just connect it to the Aura app, and then you can start uploading photos to this frame from the comfort of your own home. So I'm here in Tulsa, Oklahoma. I can upload a photo via the Aura app, and my mom in Oklahoma City will start seeing it displayed in her Aura frame. And besides photos, you can also upload videos as well. It's a really cool, cool product for Mother's Day, and Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com and use code MANLINESS to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com. That's A-U-R-A, frames.com. Use code MANLINESS at checkout to get $30 off plus free shipping for their best-selling frame. Terms and conditions apply. If you're like me, you've probably signed up for subscription services, but then you forgot about them. I'm talking about newsletters, streaming services, things like that. Well, with the personal finance app Rocket Money, it can help you find and cancel your unwanted subscriptions. It can also monitor your spending and help you lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. I had a chance to use Rocket Money, connected it to my checking account, and it found a bunch of subscription services that I forgot about. I was able to cancel them, and I was able to save a lot of money because the stuff adds up. Besides canceling your unwanted subscriptions, Rocket Money will even try to negotiate lower bills for you, up to 20%. All you have to do is submit a picture of your bill, and Rocket Money takes care of the rest. They'll deal with customer service for you. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all the app's features. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/manliness. That's rocketmoney.com/manliness, rocketmoney.com/manliness. Have you ever been to an event where you just had to get the best seats? Like maybe it was a concert for your favorite band, or maybe it was an important game for your favorite team. Well, to do that, you had to set an alarm to get the tickets as soon as they went on sale. When you want the best, you have to act quickly, or someone else will get it instead. It's like if you are trying to hire for your business and you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. So what's the best way to do that? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast, and right now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/manliness. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best people fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/manliness. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/manliness, M-A-N-L-I-N-E-S-S. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Very cool. You know, you talked about kind of taking up more space as a way to display power. I remember like this very distinctly when I was a kid, my dad, when he'd have employees come over to our house for like, you know, a barbecue or a grill. Like, I remember like he would like, when he'd sit on the recliner, like he would like drape a leg over.
Exactly.
And like, I remember like a kid, I was like, that's pretty goofy. But then now I'm like, that's just, that was like total power display by my, by my
that's
dad.
That's an alpha male signaling.
Yeah. Okay, my dad was an alpha male. That's cool. Okay,
doesn't that feel good?
Yeah,
And the third recommendation that I would give, if you really want to take charisma to the next level, take tango.
Okay.
And the reason that I specifically recommend tango is that it's one of the few truly improvisational partner dance that also has. I mean, capoeira obviously is both a fighting art and a dance that is improvisational, but it doesn't have that contact. It doesn't have that dialogue that close that tango will give you. And so since conversation, any interaction really is a dance. It's a conversation. There is a choreography. And learning improvisational choreography in the partner space can make you a whole lot more powerful in that realm.
Interesting. Yeah. So yeah, I actually took dance lessons with my wife, and we did tango.
Smart man.
Yeah. And it was really cool to kind of, you know, you use your body to like just sort of subtly, you know, guide your partner to like where you want them to go.
Yeah. You communicate.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so we talked about presence. We talked about warmth or not warmth. We talked about power. So like what warmth, like what do you mean by that? Just you're kind, gentle.
Yeah, warmth is really simply giving people the impression that you have goodwill towards them. And it does go back to evolutionary roots. Someone who both has the power to affect our world and thinks kindly of us is a really valuable asset. So that's someone that we really want to pay attention to, focus on, cultivate as a contact. And warmth is evaluated 100%. Through body language and behavior. There's going to be no status symbols. There's the clothing that you wear really won't play any part. What we look at is not the face in general, but more specifically the eyes and the voice.
Gotcha.
Those are the two biggest markers of warmth.
So you can't, it's hard to fake warmth.
Yeah, and warmth is indeed, because it relies so thoroughly on body language, and because there's far too many body language signals that we send out every minute for us to fake it coherently, warmth is one of those things that you can't fake. Now, that said, you can placebo effect your way into a warmth mindset that will then translate into your body language and behavior.
Okay, gotcha. So do you need all three to be charismatic, or can you?
Yeah,
you do.
Yep. And the only thing that changes is what kind of charisma you'll get, depending on which of the three is most prevalent. But you absolutely need all three, and you can't do without any of them.
All right. So yeah, that leads us to our next question. So what are these types of charisma you talk about?
So let's be clear. It's broken down into 4 charisma styles in the book because Penguin insisted that it be broken down into 4.
I know how that goes writing a book.
Right?
Yeah.
There's no really 4 categories. Obviously, there's every charisma is more complex than that, and it's going to be mixing between the styles. You can flow from one style to the other, but they're good groupings And also there are a couple of styles of, that I couldn't put in the book simply for decency levels, and also because I'm focused on the business world. But let's say that you have highest levels of presence, what you'll get is focused charisma. And if you know Elon Musk, the founder of Tesla, SpaceX, etc., Elon is very, very focused charisma capable. And he can really turn that particular kind of charisma on at will. If you think of Jobs, which is, of course, what too many people seek to emulate, you're looking at visionary charisma. Let's say that with you, of the three, power, confidence is the highest of the three levels. You'd be looking at authority charisma. And Colin Powell is a great example of that. And last but not least, if warmth is the highest, you can have the effect that both the Dalai Lama and Clinton have. They both rely primarily on warmth.
Gotcha. But they still have those other elements, though, like absolutely. Power. And that's kind of surprising. Like the Dalai Lama displays power, right? Even though he's the Dalai Lama.
Come on, the status. Yeah. Well, especially because he's the Dalai Lama. There are many other monks who have this. Mathieu Ricard is a good example. I met a delegation of eight monks recently in the Bay Area who are just incredibly cool, who are coming on a what they call a compassion tour. And being in their presence is really being in the presence of pure joy, unconditional kindness and goodwill. It's almost overpowering, but because there isn't this whole status built around them, it's not the same otherworldly effect and reality distortion field as you'll get with a Dalai Lama.
Interesting. So these different charismatic styles, you kind of mentioned earlier that all of us might be predisposed or be more comfortable with a certain style because of just of our personalities.
And the rule of thumb is in situations where the outcome doesn't really matter, try out new styles and push out of your comfort zone. In a high-stakes situation, stick close to home and use the tools that you're comfortable with and that you can rely on.
Gotcha. So if you're giving like a big pitch, like this is not the time to show that you are the alpha male, you know, you're not going to be a gorilla if you're not naturally a gorilla.
If you're not naturally a gorilla, correct.
Okay.
A lot of people have a certain fluency of styles. And also remember this, the whole 10,000 hours really comes into play. So I think you'd mentioned the video that's on my website. That's one where it seems so effortless because I could say it backwards in my sleep. Mm-hmm. I've been giving this presentation on this subject for 10 years.
Yeah.
And as a result, every breath is conscious. Every tilt of the head is deliberate. That is the choreography of movement. And obviously, it's not perfect by any means, but everything is deliberately chosen. And you'll see me flow from focus to power to kindness and all the other charisma styles. You'll in the real superstars, whether it's Oprah or whether it's Clinton, you will see them flow from one style of charisma to another. You don't need to do that if you're not paid to present for a living.
Okay. I just had a question and it just slipped my mind. Okay. Well, so yeah, here's the question. Okay. So I know a lot of people might be listening to this, like, okay, this is great, but there's sort of like this ick factor. They're like, cause we're this culture where like you have to be authentic, right? Like you have to like whatever, you know, comes out of you naturally, that's what you do. I think a lot of people, there's like, I don't want to do that. It's not authentic. What's your argument?
I love that question. So there's a couple of answers. I can give you the flippant answer when people tell me, Flippin's I don't want to play games. And I always answer, you're playing them anyway. You might as well win.
Yeah.
The other answer, when people say, but isn't that manipulation? I say, you are manipulating everyone on a constant basis. Manipulation is simply trying to get people to do a specific thing. And really, the only thing that matters is intent. But if we get a bit less flippant, and look at authenticity, I would ask you this. Am I being inauthentic right now by speaking English with you?
Well, no. I would say no, yeah.
And yet, I am choosing to speak a language that is not my native tongue in order for us to be able to communicate better. And in the very same way, charisma is a tool like any other to enable you to communicate better. Again, it's back to, it's all about what you use it for. And so charisma is a tool in the same sense that if a plumber comes to fix a leak, is he better off with having one single tool or is he better off with having 16 of them?
You need multiple tools.
Exactly. So that's the way I view charisma. So I'm fortunate enough that I speak several languages and I don't have an inner philosophical debate before switching languages as to, you know, am I really staying close to my authentic nature here, even though I'm going to speak a language that's not my own? Same with charisma.
Okay. Okay, here's the question. So you mentioned some of the charisma styles didn't make it into your book because they weren't really business related.
Yeah.
What were some of those? And they were a little indecent, you said.
Yeah, well, obviously the seductive charisma, and that's where the whole, I guess, underworld of the PUAs or PUAs comes along. And what's been hilarious for me is that for whatever reason, they and I tended to get along very well. And some of my closest friends were characters, real life characters in Neil Strauss's book, The Game. So superstar charisma is one that you can absolutely learn. And I don't know if you offer those kind of programs, but no. I know that the guys at The Art of Charm do. I know that there's a couple of really good programs to learn seductive charisma.
So, like, are they, like, some of the stuff that they, like, put out there, like, the PUA community, some of it just seems like, okay, this is sort of, like, woo-woo stuff, but is it actually...
Yeah, some of it is complete horse shit. And a lot of the good stuff is really plagiarizing Cialdini's work. Robert Cialdini is kind of the granddad of this entire field of influence. And so a lot of the more credible stuff is plagiarizing Cialdini without obviously giving attribution. But that said, there are some of those programs that package extremely neatly. And I saw Neil, I flew down. Neil gives seminars for what is called, I think, The Society.
Yeah.
Right. And I flew down to speak at one of his seminars. And so I saw the rest of it, and his neuroscience is right on target. And he's obviously focused on seductive charisma, seduction charisma. And if you look at someone like him, it's really solid and it works.
Interesting. So, like, what sort of charisma, I guess the three pillars when you're trying to do seductive charisma, would you focus on?
All three.
All three?
Sorry. Yeah.
All three. Okay.
Neil might tell you that you focus more on confidence, but the real answer actually, to tell you the truth, is it depends where you're starting from.
Okay.
If you already are emanating so much confidence that you come across as borderline insufferable, you are genuinely going to turn off a lot of people. Cocky funny only goes so far.
Yeah, that's the common trope, right? Like, you got to be cocky funny.
Yeah, and it'll work for the first 5 minutes, but if you try cocky funny on me, I'll enjoy it for, I don't know, 5-10 minutes, and then I'm like, all right, do you actually have depth there? Because if you don't, I'm out. So you really have to have the ability to show all three.
Okay. So what is seductive charisma look like? I mean, I kind of get warmth, you know, sort of authoritative charisma. I understand what would seductive charisma look like?
Seductive charisma is more felt than it is seen. So let's distinguish between two. Superstar charisma. Think Marilyn Monroe. Marilyn Monroe could turn that charisma on. And my book starts with a story about that, where she could consciously turn on her superstar charisma and the world stopped around her. That's a charisma that's visible at 10 paces. Seduction charisma is really all about your target. If you are able to make your target feel attracted to you, if you're able to create that slight otherworldly feel that the two of you are in your little universe and that she or he is completely enraptured by you, that's seduction charisma. It's less about what it looks like and more about how it feels to the target.
Got you. Yeah, I read a book not too long ago called Swoon about, like, lady killers, basically.
Yeah.
And one of them, kind of surprising one, was, like, Lord Byron. Well, you know, everyone knows Lord Byron was a womanizer.
Yeah.
But, like, the thing was, like, he wasn't a very attractive guy. Like, he had a
club
foot.
No, really,
like,
not.
Like, but he was still able to, like, these women just flocked to him. You know, they wanted to be near him. So he had seductive charisma.
He very much had, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
That's interesting.
And again, the type of seductive charisma will really need to be tailored to your target. And so let's talk about Neil's book, The Game. There's a lot of criticism about all the elements that the book is missing. And yes, there are a lot, but keep in mind that, if I remember correctly, the book originally was 700 pages. So he had to cut a hell of a lot. Every target will need a tiny variation, or actually a huge variation. If you're looking specifically at creating seduction charisma, and if you were trying to seduce me, or if you're trying to seduce another woman, we would react to completely different elements. And for some women, because of genetics, upbringing, culture, personality, whatever, let's say that one of them will love. So for them, go cocky, funny all the way, and actually go the whole, you know, go the whole negging route, etc., and that'll work. For others, they're going to want to see what level of self-awareness you have. What depth can you go to? And if you can't show that, you've lost them, and there's no way you can get them back.
Yeah.
So yeah, keep in mind that it's incredibly individual. And the other thing that I know Neil couldn't talk about in the book, and simply for lack of space, but which is absolutely critical, is social class. So that's kind of a taboo subject in this country.
Mm-hmm.
But social class, and social class is not money, but really, what are the strata of social class? That actually will greatly affect your ability to take a girl home if that's what you're looking for.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been reading, I'm actually working on a series about men and status.
Oh, excellent.
And it's surprising. Like, some of the research is really surprising that's out there. It's kind of counterintuitive. And yeah, I think one of the problem what I see with like the whole PUA community, like, I understand there's guys that like they need that. They're just like, they're awkward. Mm-hmm. They need that. And I feel like a lot of times they just use it as sort of like a one size fits all. Like, they just, okay, take this and I'm going to take the same approach with every woman. And then yeah. It doesn't work. And you're like, what's going on?
It's a great starting point. It's a great confidence booster because, you know, just the relief that you can learn this stuff and knowing that there is a system. So it's a great starting point. But then there are going to be so many individual pitfalls. And I'm glad that you're looking at status. Are you going to write a piece about status and social class?
Yeah. I mean, it's awesome. It's that's kind of where I'm going at it. And it's just, I mean, the thing I'm going at is how status affects men differently than women. That's one of the key components, because one thing I found is that like status defeat or rejection.
Lights up the amygdala like,
yeah,
crazy.
It's like their cortisol levels spike more than women.
Mm-hmm. It shortens your life. You age faster, you die sooner, and you have a less happy life.
Yeah. And kind of the angle I'm going at with it is that today, I mean, like, men face constant status defeat because, like, we're so connected, right? You're not only just competing against like the guy in your town or the neighbor, you're competing with like everyone on, like, the rich kids of Instagram.
Yep.
Like all the bro dudes have blogs that are traveling over the world, and, like, you know, that's who you're competing against now.
Yeah. It's really, really hard. In the same way, you can make the parallel for women who are facing similar status defeat with impossible physical beauty standards.
Yeah.
Right. And you look at the death rate amongst teenager eating disorders amongst women is the leading cause of death amongst American teenagers.
It's horrible.
Female teenagers.
Yeah.
It is. So the other thing to look at with status is you have a couple of people who have, Tim Ferriss is one, Leo Babauta, who runs Zen Habits, is another, who advocate a media diet. Mm-hmm. And just for your own mental health, for your own confidence, for your own charisma, frankly, it's an incredibly healthy thing to do.
Yeah, we had just wrote a post about taking tech Sabbaths.
You know, excellent.
Once a week, just turn everything off and get outside, reset the brain.
Yeah.
All right. So can knowing about charisma, like, inoculate you from the seductive charms of charismatic people, or is resistance futile?
Again, I think it'll depend on what kind of charisma. There are certain levels. Clinton, apparently, I'll always remember this old Republican who'd met Clinton, who told me, Bill Clinton, I hated him before I met him. I hated him after I met him. But while I met him, man, I love the man. So that's Clinton. Resistance is futile. I think that it's more a perception of inauthenticity or manipulation for a negative purpose. that will kind of kill a charismatic effect. Knowing about it can let you see the undersides. So, for example, women who have read the game or who've taken seminars or who know that literature, you'll have a hard time using the same opening lines on them or the exact same routines on them because, of course, they know about them. So I'd say, in a sense, a little bit for most forms of charisma, but there are some that will just overpower your brain.
Nothing you can do about it. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So I wish we could talk more, but I know you have to go. Where can people find out more about your work?
Oh, that's easy. AskOlivia.com, like asking a question.
That's an awesome, awesome domain name. AskOlivia.com. Well, great. Well, Olivia Fox, thank you so much for your time. It's been a pleasure.
It was a pleasure. I'll talk to you soon, Brett.
Thank you. Take care. Our guest today was Olivia Fox. She is the author of the book, The Charisma Myth, How Anyone Can Master the Art and Science of Personal Magnetism. And you can find that on Amazon.com and bookstores everywhere. And you can also find more about her work at AskOlivia.com. Well, that wraps up another edition of the Art of Manliness podcast. For more manly tips and advice, make sure to check out the Art of Manliness website at artofmanliness.com. And if you enjoy the podcast and you're getting something out of it, I'd really appreciate it if you go to iTunes or to Stitcher or whatever you use to listen to your podcast and give us a review or a rating. That will help us out a lot. So until next time, stay manly.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.